This second session will focus and shed more light on three different empty paradigms until in its, at least in its first part. And then in its second part, it will be organized in the form of a panel discussion with the intriguing title, Will There Be a Winner? So for the first part, we have three distinguished speakers who will be focusing in three different paradigms: statistical machine translation, tree-based machine translation, and hybrid machine translation, all three different tracks that are explored in Euromatrix and in Euromatrix Plus. So we start with Philip Kern from the University of Edinburgh, who is the scientific and technical coordinator of Euromatrix and Euromatrix Plus, who will be talking on progress in statistical machine translation, but also on international evaluation issues.
Yeah, so if you haven't paid attention in Franz Och's talk about statistical machine translation, you'll hear the same thing again here. So I thought this is actually a good opportunity to look a little bit back. So this is now 20 years, well, roughly 20 years, 21 years, since the first paper came out with the idea of a statistical approach to language translation. I'm not necessarily the best person to talk about these 20 years. I was still in high school back then. But I'll reflect a little bit about what has happened in these 20 years. So what have we accomplished and where are we? Let's just start with where are we. So the Euromatrix project is running an evaluation campaign every year where we not only compare research systems, so the main purpose is for people who develop systems to come together, present what they're doing and how well the systems work, but we also compare these against existing rule-based systems, and we even compare it against Google, just to keep us honest, so just to see how do we compare with our academically built systems against the state of the art in the field. So before I give you this slide, who is the winner, a couple of caveats. You can never really, you know, if your question is rule-based better than statistical, there can never really be an answer because it always depends on the task. Is the task better suited to one paradigm or the other? Are the systems properly tuned? So here are a couple of notes about the task we chose. So it's a fairly open domain news translation, just because we care about news and we like to translate news. And we like to read news much more like they want to read European laws or things like this. So that is, in a way, a very bad task for the statistical systems because we actually have no parallel training data in news. All the parallel training data we have is pretty much European Parliament and then maybe some extras. But on the other hand, we have a lot of more lingual data in news, so it's easy to get hundreds of millions of billions of words of news in any language by just crawling websites of media publications. So we participated there with our systems, and we added all kinds of commercial systems that we just took off the shelf, and we also run Google system pretty much off the shelf. Okay. Oh, that's getting too excited. These are the results. So who wins? So it's a mixed picture, actually. So for some language pairs, the best systems were statistical systems, and for other language pairs, they were rule-based systems. And so that's the first question. Why do statistical systems fare better or worse than rule-based systems, and what can be done about it? So what Franz also alluded to, German, English, English-German, you have the double problem of rich morphology and a lot of reordering, so we're not doing very well. But for other languages like French, English, you can build a system with publicly available resources and publicly available tools and be as good as all the rule-based systems on news translation. We not only build systems for those language pairs, we also build systems for all language pairs of the European Union. So these are all the official languages except Irish. So these are 462 translation systems. They're all direct translation systems, so they don't translate through English. So they might still be the world record of how many translation systems we have. And they all sit on a hard drive somewhere in Edinburgh and nobody does anything with them. So you see in this big table, the source language on the left and the target language on the top, And these are all blue scores, and nobody knows what they mean. So I put them a little bit in color, and the green scores are the highest ones, and the red scores are the really bad ones. So that already gives you some idea that some language pairs are much harder than others. So it's not as easy of taking a corpus, running a statistical season system, and you get perfect performance. For some languages, there seem to be serious problems. So we tried to figure that out, what that is. So we did a regression analysis where we took all these blue scores and compared them against certain factors like target vocabulary size, relatedness of the languages, are they from the same language family, are they not? And this is what we found. So we basically tried to find the contributing factors why some language pairs are harder than others. And these are the numbers we got with the explanatory factors we used. So a big piece, the second one, is very easy to explain, reordering. The amount of reordering you have has a huge impact on how good your translation system or your statistical translation system will be. Another one is morphology on the target side, which shows up both in the entropy in the phrase table. So if an input phrase has a lot of translations in the target phrase, it might be due that there's just a lot of morphological variance in the target side, and there are many ways to render that in the target side, so you have much higher entropy there. That is also captured by the target vocabulary size. If you have a lot of words in the target vocabulary, it's pretty much due to very rich morphology. So these factors that we listed there explain 74% of the differences in scores. So these are kind of the main factors that explain differences in performance when you use statistical systems. So the big problems really are reordering and rich morphology. So what are we going to do about that? So I'll talk now for the rest of the talk about three directions. I feel currently, it's somewhat subjective, I feel currently where the field is moving or should be moving and where progress is being made. And give you some details about this. So linguistics is kind of the idea, the old-fashioned idea of using syntax and semantics. And what have you done about that? We haven't really done much about that in statistical MT. So when statistical machine translation started out, the paper I cited at the very beginning, this is what we now call the word-based models, because as the atomic unit of translation, they translated one word to another word. You could also translate one word to multiple words, but then these were basically two different steps. And you also had word insertion and word deletion, and it actually got really, really complicated. That was the start of statistical MT, and is pretty much totally out of fashion. Nobody's doing that anymore. The only point where we do something like this is when we deal with word alignment. Then we have models of that type. So the dominant paradigm right now is phrase-based translation, which translates larger chunks of text, usually just two or three words, so they're not really gigantically big. And that's pretty much how Google Systems works as well. And yeah, coming up, not quite there, or maybe getting there, are models that are much more based in the notion of language as recursive, and you have to apply grammar rules. There are two different things you can do this. You can just either use the formalism of grammar and just try to learn the actual grammar rules from the data. This is here the formal grammar-based models. And it seems that for some language pairs, that is really the best thing to do right now. So for Chinese-English, people who work both on phrase-based and on these formal grammar-based systems get better results with the formal grammar-based systems. But the real hope is then to use real linguistic syntax. And that then means use things like noun phrases or other representations of grammar. Just to give you some more background what I mean by all that. So the first thing is these phrase space. So you have input phrase, and you map it to the output phrase. So you can see that it's really nice to map whole phrases because you get larger context. You can sometimes map three or four words at a time, so that gives you a lot of benefit. The second thing is something we explored in the Euromatrix project, which is mostly targeted at dealing with morphology by maybe translating the lemmas instead of the surface form, and then building the surface form on the target. You might be better at dealing with morphology, and we had some success with that. The third is these formal grammar-based model. So the whole thing looks a little bit like a grammar rule where you have x's and you have go from x to x. But these x's don't mean anything. They're just something that just a dummy, non-terminal. And the last one is more along the lines how you would build a system when you really have syntactic models in your mind. So you have things like noun phrases and sentences, and you explain reordering in terms of these noun phrases and sentences and verbs and all these things. So, yeah, I feel that's kind of where the field is heading to some degree, but that is currently still very wide open because there's so many questions we don't really know how to answer. So how do you actually, there's so many different grammar formalisms that the linguists come up with and that we try to follow. Do you do a phrase structure grammar where the idea is that, you know, a sentence is a larger unit and then you have noun phrases, verb phrases, a smaller unit, and then you have nouns and they're really smaller units and there's a nice hierarchy between them? Or is a better way to think about grammar as just you have a sentence and the words stand in relation to each other and there's some words that are more important, maybe the verb is more important, and the most important thing is how do words relate to each other? That's dependency structure. Yeah, how much context should you include in your rules? Should they be really context-free or context-sensitive? Should you use the real formal linguistic syntax only on the source or on the target? We don't know. Should you actually learn all these things, or should you actually hire someone who then sits down and goes over 100,000 sentences and marks up grammar trees for them, and that's what you learn from? Should you do that? And then there's an endless list of grammar formalisms. So synchronous context-free grammars, synchronous tree insertion grammars, tree adaptation grammars, CCG, LFG. It's just endless what exists out there. I want to say a little bit about semantics because that's always like the crowning jewel of where we're heading. At the end, we'll do semantics. And to some degree, we do semantics already pretty well. So there's one aspect of semantics which is lexical semantics. The classic example is words have different meanings and the machine translation system needs to know how to translate the different meanings. What are the meanings in this particular sentence? And I'd argue we're doing this actually pretty good. We have answers for that. The answer is, well, to figure out if the word bank means the bank where you put your money or the bank at the river, well, you just look at the other words of the sentence. That's what we humans do. We don't have any magic idea why the person talks about this bank or that bank. We know it from the context. If someone says, after collecting the money, he went to deposit it in the bank, obviously he went to a bank that stores money and not dropped all the money in the river. And we do this pretty well. So this is using context features, and we know how to handle it. The thing we don't know how to handle is the more complicated semantics, where you have to do inference, you have to do some kind of reasoning. So if you think about this little text here, he was more comfortable with his female relatives. He did not like his brothers, but he loved spending the summer with his cousin. So you have to translate that into German, say. And in German, you have to make a decision, is that a female cousin or a male cousin? And it seems to be a female cousin, because that would make sense in this context. But that is really hard for a computer to figure out. And I wouldn't claim that we have any real idea how to do this. Okay, well, I have to hurry a bit. So the other direction to make progress is the machine learning aspects. That's actually where most of people in statistical machine translation spend most of their time on. But it's very hard kind of to put it down in nice little figures. So think about it, there are all kinds of numbers in the statistical machine translation systems, and these numbers have to come from somewhere. How do you learn them? There are two different paradigms. Should you try to set these numbers to explain the data, or should you try to set the numbers to improve performance? And how can you really do all these things? I want to say one slide on data. I think Franz already said enough about that. This is still one of my memorable quotes about data that I heard at a conference. So don't think about algorithms, just get more data. And if you really want to think about getting more data. So that's what Eric Brill said. There are obvious things how to get data. You just crawl the web. And I feel like whatever Google does, we can do too. We can also crawl the web and just collect all the data. But maybe there are some more creative ways to generate data. So how can you get the user in the loop of helping you with creating the data? Okay, I want to do one more thing. I think I have only 1 minute left. So the other big thing where the field, I feel like, should be moving more is on the human-computer interaction. So Google is a perfect solution for gisting, getting a web page, you translate it, and you get some sense out of it. But that's not where the money is. The money is in producing publication quality translation that you print in a manual and ship to people. And if you would just give them Google translations of your English, they wouldn't like that at all. So how can you actually build better systems that interact with humans? So one thing that the field does to some degree is post-editing. So I heard that a few times. The story that I hear is, yeah, if you give people empty output and force them to post-edit, they can be faster and better, but they really, really hate it. There's another idea that was pushed by a European project called TransType, where the machine translation system really works with the human. The human actually still produces a translation, and the machine translation system makes these suggestions, and you just accept them. And another thing you could do is give the human the same material that a machine is working with, give them all the alternative translations. So we built a tool where you can also do this, where you can also click on these things and basically build your translation that way. So we have a tool like that that we built now within Neuromatrix Plus. The nice thing is it's a computer system. You can really log what people are doing. You can learn a lot about human actions and what do they do, what do they spend their time on. That was always my main question. Have to hurry up. So what we found is when we give people these assistants, they are faster and they are better. So the translations are then judged better. And there's still a lot of work to be done. I think we really just scratched the surface. So final comment. So it's a vibrant field. There's a lot of progress being made. Competitions are good, where people compare how good their systems are. That helps to spread ideas quickly. There's progress on many fronts. I mentioned linguistics, machine learning, and tools for translators. And I think it's also very important to engage the community. So open source is very important. And there are just many people interested in machine translation. It's not just one application. There are many different languages, and people care about their languages. And they're often the most qualified people to work on these languages. Okay. So it's actually online, you can check it out. So just to comment on that, so we found that we asked them afterwards, what did you find useful? And they said post-editing is not useful at all, but we measured that they're faster and better with it. So